Good morning, or good evening, or good night, or good afternoon. Welcome back to DefenderCast. I am your host, Duncan Krieger. I'm at the very start of my podcast journey, so I expect things to be a little rough in the beginning. But the most important thing is I'm planning to bring interesting people with interesting stories to you as often as possible or as often as bearable. Getting closer to bringing you content from an actual Land Rover Defender. George and I have recorded some silly stuff, which you'll no doubt start to see on YouTube very soon. I really do appreciate you tuning in to listen. Please bear with me for a few more episodes while we tighten things up. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Nicholas Russell, to DefenderCast. This could be episode 2, could be episode 22. We're not sure yet. Depends how good you are.
Great, no pressure.
It's worth me noting, that I've also got Fran in the room and Kelly in the room, and welcome to George in the room as well, who hopefully you're going to be hearing and seeing a lot more from. I'm not going to say too much about Nick. This episode was recorded somewhere different. The theme of this is just constantly to take this on the road. Like, you're going to hear from me, where am I now, where am I now? At the moment, I'm sitting in my kitchen.
Can we get the exotic location first?
You do, yeah. Well, the Defender might not be as exotic as it feels in my head at the moment.
True.
But we'll have to see about that. So, Nicholas Russell, where do I start? It's, I don't know, we kind of met each other twice, if you like, once when we were kids and once in a more of a business, sort of grown-up way.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, tell us something about how we met.
How we met, why don't I start before that and then get to the point of where we met business-wise. I don't think everyone needs to know how we met when we were 15 at some party.
Fair enough.
Unless you
took my girl, in which case, I don't know.
Listen, you've got to let go of
this.
Life happens. We met again, when was it? February 2013, I think it was. That's when I started working at West One. So I'll backtrack a bit from that. I came into my career a little bit late, really, in the career I'm in now. Did a few different jobs, didn't really know what I wanted to do. Tried a bit of business development in sort of, I suppose, online media.
What were they? What sort of jobs were they?
So the last job I had before I joined with you, I worked for a building company.
Oh yeah, I remember.
God damn, that was the hardest job I've ever done. Really? I tell you what, they always say, I think there's always a job that toughens you up, and that job toughened me up. Right, I was working in RAF Benson in the middle of, I don't even know, I think it's Oxfordshire. Right, it was in winter, it was -3, -4 degrees every day. I had to run a team of 20 guys doing kitchens and bathrooms on an RAF base. Safe to say, people in the military aren't too friendly with us so-called civilians. And we had to run 15 kitchens and bathrooms a week.
What were you doing there? What were you actually doing?
So I worked for a building company, had the contract with the MOD. And we were replacing all the kitchens and bathrooms in all the offices'
houses.
What
were you doing on site?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. What,
I'm assuming I know.
So
you.
I was project managing for the guy who owned it with very little experience. But I learned a lot.
How many people were in the team?
20 guys.
Fucking hell.
All with different backgrounds: Romanian, Polish, English.
So why did this toughen you up? What toughened?
Because
you
there
up
was
about
one
it?
Particular guy who was running it for the MOD. He was a typical northern tough roughneck from Wigan who spent most of the year staying away from his family and getting drunk in the evenings.
I'm sure he loved you.
And you know, little Nick Russell from Northwest London, and he didn't often see eye to eye. He really gave it to me a lot every single day.
Really?
I felt like I was in the military with
what
him
was
there,
bullying?
Honestly. That's about bullying.
Did you ever go home crying?
Thankfully not. I had a guy in between who did the talking for me.
Yeah.
But he just gave me a bloody hard time. In the freezing cold winter, I had to be there at 7 a.m, 50 miles each way. I mean, that was a graft.
That does actually remind me a little bit of, it's bringing back memories of when we did meet. Because soon after that, I guess, or so, how long were you there before we did meet?
So there was a contract first in North London, where we were working for a housing association. Then they won the contract. So I was probably there for 4 months, 5 months.
Okay, all right. Brutal. Then what?
Then I got a call from a mutual friend of ours. Shout out to Danny Whitescorn, who said,
yes,
and I told him I wanted to get back into a more professional, more property environment rather than building, because I knew building wasn't going to be for me. And he had, see, I told him I wanted to get back into it. Funnily enough, 2 weeks later, you two, I think, had a conversation. You said you were looking to expand West One, which you've, I'm sure, mentioned on here before.
Not very much yet.
Okay, fine. We'll go into that a little bit more. And he introduced the two of us.
I like to look forward more and look back less. But
well, you know, it's good to reflect on your successes.
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you.
And I, look, my family have a property background. My dad's been in property for over 40 years. My brother's a property developer. My brother's youngest brother has now decided to go into property after being in banking. Didn't really have anything to contribute to the Friday night dinner table, so he decided to go back into property. And my grandfather was in property. So I had some good connections, knew a lot of people, family knew a lot of people. And at the time, I think there was a business development role, manager role going at West One. I didn't even have a clue what a bridging loan was when we first
started. You know, there wasn't a role going. What I remember is exactly what I preach now, which is that I always want to meet good people.
Mm.
First.
Yeah.
And if I meet someone and I think, you know what, we can do something here, then let's create a role.
Yeah.
And it was easy for you, or it was easy for your role, because basically you eat what you kill.
Yeah.
So you're a salesman. You go out, you bill X, you keep some, we keep some. And there was a simple way that, you know, if I thought you could do that role, that you were going to pay for yourself.
Yeah.
So go on, we sat down, didn't we?
So we sat down, and I think, because of the role I'd just done.
Are you on your arse at this point, or are you?
I'm not on my arse, but I'm ready to make a career. And I think that I'd done a few roles, built some experience, built some life experience, learned a bit about myself. So I think it's very easy to go from school to uni to a job. You don't really know much about yourself. You're kind of forced into a career from the age of 16, 17 when you pick your A-levels and university degree. And half the people at the time hit their mid to late 20s realised, shit, this isn't actually even what I want to do. So I picked up some experience, floating around a little bit. We had a chat. I then met with the rest of the team, the rest of the partners, and felt I could contribute something a little bit different, because most people in that role are going down the broker route. And that was the broker model, right? And it is for most bridging lenders. And the role was pretty much to try and look at direct property links. So property developers, property investors, and go direct to source.
So you said you didn't know much about bridging then?
No. I didn't know what it was. Thought it was something cars drove over.
Yeah. We can talk about more about what it is, but what made you think it was a good idea then?
Probably the advice from my dad, actually. Speaking to a few people in property, who said it was a fast-growing industry. You know, recession had hit, banks weren't lending. It was an easy way to access capital for property developers. And, you know, there were good returns to be made. And I think overall it was just a good advice to get my foot in the door back into property. And lending was a slightly different route than I thought I'd ever go down.
Yeah.
So, you know what, it was about taking advice, speaking to the right people who are in the know, rather than just jumping in and with a bit of hope. So,
which you tend to do.
Calculated hope these days, rather than just blind leading the blind stuff. So,
okay.
I think we both took a chance on each other.
Yeah.
In some respects.
Yeah, I remember you. I remember some of my partners being not sure about, you know, well, who is it now that you want to give a job to and why? And actually, it worked out really, really well.
It did work out well.
You were with us for a long time, but I would say you are probably one of my best protégés,
or
whatever the word is.
One of.
Oh, okay. You were brilliant. You know, we had a really, really good run together for a very long time, and we've remained friends. And the difference, I guess, the things I miss about running that size business when it was then was that we all loved coming to work. We all got on well, we worked hard, we played hard, but we had a great business. But
there was a lot of mutual respect as well, because everyone was...
How long were you there?
I mean, it felt longer, but it was only 15 months.
Yeah, 15 months.
So,
before you ditched us.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the toughest decisions I ever made. I mean, look, just to go back to when I started, I think I was so keen and so desperate to start a career. There's a little bit of me that thought I was falling a bit behind the rest of my friends who all had careers. And I was so desperate to play catch up. I was like a sponge. And you know, you gave me some good advice when I first started. You said, no question is a stupid question. You're never going to learn unless you ask these questions and absorb it. And I've always passed that down to anyone that's subsequently worked for me.
That's good.
It's a bit of information I've always passed down, because if you're in a new industry, a new job or a new career, you're not supposed to know anything.
Yeah.
But if you sit there thinking you know it all, you're going to get found out very, very quickly. And people who are in the know aren't going to take you seriously.
Yeah, even if you do think you know everything, if someone stumps you and asks a question, then...
I'm happy to say I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know it all, right? And I'm happy to put the right people around me to give the right advice.
No, I'm glad that there were some bits that rubbed off on you. So what did you do after that? Talk to us.
So after 15 months, actually, I cold called
Lambeth. I was pretty pissed off when you left, actually.
Yeah, I know. I know. You made it perfectly known.
Yeah, I mean...
You're not one to hold back, Dan.
Yeah, let's just talk about that a bit, because I don't really remember everything as well as I should do, but then I have flashes of, hang on a minute, you prick.
I remember.
What? Why did you leave? We were flying. Everything was going well.
And actually, my last month was the most I think a BDM had ever earned at West One.
It's probably the most you've ever earned.
It still is. Bad move. No, it was. Weird. You know what? I called Lambert Smith Hampton, who anyone doesn't know is one of the largest property consultancies in the UK. They've got like 30-odd, 40 offices around the UK. And they had a capital markets team, they had an auctions team. And at the time, I was calling to offer funding through their auction team, through their, you know, for their investment team. We had a meeting with them. We talked about white labeling some
Basically
funds.
On my time, yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah, you were there. No, you weren't. Stephen was there. And we met the COO, which was a bit strange. Obviously, with these things, I got all excited, but a month goes by and no one does anything, because that's always what happens with these things.
Yeah.
Called another meeting. The honest truth is, you and Stephen turned up 20 minutes late. That's never happened before. And I was sitting there with the COO. Started saying some very nice things to me. Oh, you know, I thought you were a really good salesman in the meeting. And he was really blowing smoke up my ass. And to be honest, I didn't know where I was coming from. And I turned around to him, and I suppose this is where opportunity knocks. And I just said, listen, stop blowing smoke up my ass. If you think I'm that good, make me an offer. Out of the blue. He was taken aback. He then interviewed me.
Where did you get that confidence from? Has that always been?
I think the confidence came from grafting hard and getting some success at West One.
Yeah.
I think the fact is I knew I was on the right path. I knew I was doing some right things. I was earning some money to reward myself for that fact.
So is that the meeting that before, when I walked in 20 minutes late, I sat down and had a 5-minute meeting. We basically had an argument and I stormed out.
Yeah, it's basically the two of you had, excuse my French, a dick measuring competition.
Anyway, that
happened. The ball started rolling. They said transpired. They wanted to start a finance.
It's
brokerage.
Actually relevant as well. Sorry to jump around, that you ended up suing each other, like as a sign.
There wasn't suing, but certainly lawyers were instructed towards the end.
We can put that in however you want, but basically,
I think there's lessons to be learned about how
one role you left with like a friend, a lifelong friend, and a business kind of colleague, and the other one left with a lawsuit or with an argument or
maybe that's the difference between family-run businesses and corporate businesses. I mean, there could be.
It's just a difference between nice guys and pricks.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, all right, you said it. I didn't.
Okay, cool.
So. It transpires, as I said, they wanted to set up a finance brokerage, which, quite frankly, I had no clue about. I mean, obviously, I knew brokers because half my job was seeing brokers. And all I really knew about was bridging finance. But I kind of felt that there was a level of knowledge and sophistication to bridging that I felt, if this is going to be my career, funding and finance and lending is going to be where I'm going to be, I need to learn more than just bridging. I need to expand my horizons into... whether it's development finance, investments,
did you also have one eye on one day being your own boss?
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, look, being around you and Stephen, you guys, I think I split you guys in age by like 2 months either side.
Yeah.
Right, we're the same age. And seeing you guys graft, be successful, but work hard, play hard, and seeing the rewards that you were getting was an inspiration to me to say, this is what I want, how am I going to get it? And the only way I'm going to get it is actually by knowledge first, getting experience, putting the hours in, and then when you've got the experience and knowledge, that's what I want to be, then I can be an entrepreneur. But
yeah, so I guess that made your decision to sort of flitter between jobs and ditch your friends quickly. But ultimately, your goal...
Ditch my friend.
Ultimately, your goal was to be your own boss. And it was just a stepping stone.
It was, but I didn't want to jump into it before I, you know, head first. I mean, I had to build some respect in the industry.
In that role?
3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah, but that's interesting. So the guy brought me in and said, look, there's a guy here to head it up. He's in his 40s, typical pinstripe suit broker, spends his time smoking fags, drinking tea and leaving to go to the pub most of the time after about 1-2 o'clock. I ended up doing a couple of bridging deals. They said there wasn't much pressure on me, just learn. So I tried to absorb everything I could. After 7 months, this guy fell out with senior management. So I'm sitting there after being in a very good job, earning a lot of money with a young kid and a wife and a house, with no boss. And I sat there and I thought, you know what, I think I can do this on my own, and I don't want them to bring someone in. I'm going to sit there for 3 to 5 years working for someone who I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get on with and spend another 5 years of my career working.
Yeah.
So I took the bull by the horns. I approached senior management and said, listen, give me 6 months. I reckon I can build a brokerage. Worst case is, in 6 months, if it doesn't work, you say, listen, we gave you an opportunity to want to go down a more experienced route. If it does work, wow, you've given a young guy an opportunity in a big, big
firm. How old are you at this point?
30.
Yeah, sure.
In one of those things, the average head of department is probably in their 50s, but in the head of department, these corporate firms.
Yeah, fair enough.
They've got a lot of experience. And bear in mind, I've been in the industry not even 2 years. It was quite a jump.
So in some respects, you were kind of running your own business for them as well. It was quite good learning because you had your own kind of, as I will always say, you had your own P&L to look after.
I did have my own P&L. So, eventually, I became a fully fledged department. So what happened was they said, well, off you go then. And that was it. I was like, okay. So, but the thing is, the skills that actually I learned with you was how to, that business development side, if you don't have it, you're not going to build a network. Yeah. And I had a network and I knew people, lent on some favours, worked it, grafted, and you know, it was good. I was able to sell the brand to help me launch myself into the marketplace, and LSH is a big brand. And after 1 month, I brought in a young guy to work with me to be my assistant, so I could do, you know, more of the sales and he could do more of the case management.
Yeah.
Within 6 months, I brought in another guy. By the end of the year, I had a broker in Birmingham, and within a year, there was 5 of us in the team. And you know, look, there were a lot of things I didn't know. You know, I had a hotel development. I'd never funded a hotel in my life. I didn't even know how
to explain what that job is that you, what is this business you were doing? Just in simple terms, okay, so what are you going on about?
It's a real estate finance brokerage, okay? But it's not a mortgage brokerage.
So give me 3 examples of a deal that would fit into real estate finance that you would be the broker of.
So one of the things that I took advantage of was permitted development rights, converting offices into residential under PDR.
Yeah.
And it kicked off and it boomed, and all of a sudden there was a plethora of new lenders coming into the market, which actually suited me because it meant that developers who didn't have relationships with these banks needed a broker to look, you know, they needed to
So basically you
check all the different lenders,
products. Building relationships with people who want to buy and build these developments. Correct. And you're telling them, I can find a bank who will fund this project for you, either cheaper or with higher leverage. Correct. Or something.
And pricing related.
And that job that you started doing for LSH, is how similar to your role now is that?
It's very similar. I mean,
let's put LSH to bed.
Okay, so I spent 3.5 years in there in total, ran the department for 2.5 years, 3 years. We did in excess of 200 million of debt and equity from a standing start, 95% of which was all self-generated.
Okay, amazing.
Right, and I got
Now it's time to start on your own.
Yeah.
If you're ever going to do it, now's the time.
Well, Andrew, I'll go back a step, right? So a year before I left, I handed my note to him.
Okay.
I had an investor. And I decided I was going to go alone. I had a couple of different offers, but someone I was close with, he made me an offer and we were going to go with it. LSH countered me enormously, made me such a big offer. And at the time, it was such a big offer that I had actually decided. And I also felt that the investor at the time maybe wasn't the right person for me.
Okay.
Right? And it was a hunch, it was a gut feel, and I'm glad I stuck with it because 3 weeks later, Brexit happened.
Yeah.
So luckily, I stayed in my job. Right, because who knows where that investment would have gone, where the market was going, and it gave me some stability for a year. But I couldn't shake the burning desire to go on my own.
Okay.
I knew that I was going to leave a year later, whatever happened.
Yeah,
they thought they bought me for the next 3 years.
Yeah,
right, but that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I remember having those conversations with you,
And you advised me and Stephen as well.
Yeah.
Also gave me some really solid advice, and sometimes you got to listen to the right. If you got mentors and good people around you, they're not going to advise you. They're only going to advise you in the right way.
Is that a little bit like how our relationships develop?
Definitely. I think there's a friendship-mentorship balance between the two. Yeah. 100%. You know, I'll always see it like that.
Yeah. I think that's two ways as well. You know, I definitely talk to you about things that, you know, I wouldn't talk to other friends about, obviously because of our sort of long working relationship. And it is a surprise that that was only 15 months that
I know.
You actually worked for me. But, you know, we've worked together ever since. And,
yeah.
You know, that's cool.
I think, look, the speed at which my career has gone from starting with you, because I think that's my real career. The bit beforehand was the bit that, like, I worked out what I didn't want to do and toughen me up.
Yeah.
Because I think you've got to toughen up because the world throws shit at you.
Yeah.
And you've got to find a way to get through it. And so I decided a year later, the time was right. And I had two people, a PropCo approach me and say, look, we want to invest in you. We want to set up a brokerage. And I felt the time was
when
right.
When is this? When is this?
So this was...
When did you start?
I started...
Officially.
I suppose September 2017 was really officially started.
Yeah.
So we've been going for whatever it is, close to 18 months now, coming up to.
Doing exactly what you were doing before?
I don't know, slightly different. So I brought into...
What's the name? Where can people find
it? So the name of my business is Creation Property Finance. We're more of a debt brokerage and advisory business now.
Right, hang on. This is your pitch, okay? I've got a couple of things written down here that I want to get people to do. And one thing, you said, I said pitch, you said not pitch. I call it a pitch. I want to know...
Well, I'll talk about my business.
What's Creation? Why the fuck would anyone ever want to talk to you about property finance?
I have no idea. That's my pitch. My website is now. So business is Creation Property Finance. We are a real estate finance brokerage and advisory business. I say advisory bit as well because I think the calibre of people I've brought in would indicate that there's a lot of experience there to advise clients through many years of putting together funding. So if I go to the people, let me go through the people that work with me in the business, because I think that's vitally important. Very early on when we started, I brought in Chloe Skay, who'd spent 11 years at Nationwide on UK and European origination and recoveries. So she's got some really, really good experience and what I'd call the sort of 2-3 million to 25 million space on investment deals.
What's the difference between you and her? What's her role and your role?
Chloe, because Chloe has a deep understanding of how the banks operate, how they want credit papers to be presented, she's the detail.
Yeah.
You know, my speciality is more development bridging, and I suppose I've recently got into forward funding on sort of larger ticket PRS deals with institutions. Which is really interesting because putting together debt, the end sale and the developer all together takes a lot of moving parts and a lot of patience, especially when you're dealing with slow institutions. So Chloe's been great. The trade-off is that I've taught her about bridging development, and she really is the go-to person in our office for that sort of investment ticket. But she's now well-versed across the board. Then January 18, what I think was a big coup for our business, we brought in Steve Boyle, who was a 20-year insurance pension fund lender. So he spent 7 years at Legal & General only doing big ticket portfolio investment deals. And before that, he was 13 years at Aviva. And he goes anywhere from 25 million. I think the largest ticket he's done is in excess of 250 million on a single ticket. So he legitimizes my larger ticket deals. I mean, look, we can all say we can do these things, but having someone here who can actually say that...
Well, you're aiming to do them and you think that gives you the best possible chance of doing them.
Yeah. I mean, look, we don't want to be running around chasing just big deals, but if one comes across our desk, we've got the capability to do it. Plus, he's got 20 years experience of dealing with clients who have those sorts of transactions.
Okay.
So we really are across the board. We're not regulated.
And you?
Me?
Yeah, so that's those two.
Me? Look, my role really is to generate business, evangelize the brand, strategize the business, make sure focus a bit more on the bridging development, the far side of the business.
Fee earner, or
do you know what? I don't care about the ego of being the biggest fee earner. Yeah. It's about bringing in fees, supporting the guys, making sure they've got enough support so that, and also look, at the end of the day, those guys are my business. I've got to give them enough support. Make them feel that they want to sell my business.
So you're 18 months into this business. Yep. Just do me a favor. Do that. Just I want to hear, like, dumb it down. Like, what does Creation do for?
Okay, we help
someone investor- who doesn't know anything about what a 20 million ticket size means.
Okay, fine. Yeah. So we help developers and investors raise capital for any project they're either looking to buy or develop. Okay. I think that's in its purest, simplest form.
Perfect. That's what I wanted to do.
And that could be right from debt up to equity.
Fine. So meaning anyone who wants to you know, borrow money or try and put a whole kind of...
If they want to enter into a partnership with someone moving forward to grow a business, we can do that. But if they want to just borrow
money... And it's all property related. Everything's focused around an asset. Always.
Fine. We have done one weird unsecured lend, but I don't think I'll be getting into that too much.
A couple of things I want to cover with kind of business owners, entrepreneurs, is just employment, like just employment versus self-employment. Discuss. And then what I'm looking for is a couple of things. Like firstly, the leap from I'm handing in my notice and I am not going to be getting a monthly paycheck from this day forward, because I think a lot of people just struggle with that.
Yeah, okay. So I think there's a few elements to that. I think first of all, both are important. And I think the key is make sure there's two things. One, you've got the relevant experience and time and knowledge, and you've put the yards in as an employee, and you're ready to become an employer, because it is a big jump. It falls on you at the end of the day. Look, when I was at LSH, I had an HR department. I had someone that everything was done for me. My tax was paid for me.
Don't people who are employed who want to go self-employed do a shit ton of work, like in their spare time? In, can't you be with almost any business just fully up and running and operational before, in respect that you...
Well, I think you've got to. I mean, what you don't want to do is go, right, I'm going to go and start my own business, and then, right, I'm handing my notice in, and the next day you're going, right, okay, let's start. Well, you've got no website, you've maybe no business plan, have you bought, maybe you need no some customers. Partners, no customers, you've got nothing, right?
Okay, so
for me, I'll tell you, for me, when I made the jump, I had my partners in place who've been very important.
Because all the time you were sort of talking to people about one day I'm going to do this?
Always. Yeah. Always. And the right people and the people that have done it before me. Because I want to pick people's brains, what's the do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes. It's an absolute fact. I mean, at the end of the day, you're in charge of your own business, so you're going to make mistakes because we're not perfect.
Yeah.
But it was about speaking to people like you and speaking to other people that have gone before me that have made the jump. Made some mistakes.
Did it feel like a massive risk or leap of faith?
No, I was so ready.
That's good.
I think that running my own department within a business, effectively I was kind of siloed off a little bit when I was at LSH. So I could run my own team. What I'd do was do the really fun meetings, weekly meetings that you do at a corporate firm, right? Yeah. Reporting. But ultimately we were left to our own devices. I think you are, if you're doing the right numbers and the right fees and you're conducting yourself the right way, you'll always get left to your own devices.
You had a good grounding in that respect.
Really good grounding. I think if you are just an employee but with not much responsibility and you just copy the boss because you want to make some money, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I guess kind of one of the things I'm hearing is that someone should be preparing themselves a lot. Not just about this big decision of shall I do it or shall I not. You should have as much as you possibly can in place beforehand.
100%.
And be talking about it and planning it all the time, speaking to people.
Oh yeah, I had my brand design, my website. I was already talking to Chloe before we even started because, you know, I want to prep for day one business, open the shop. Or within at least a week or two. Because every day you don't open, you're burning through cash.
Yeah.
And that's personally and business.
I assume you don't, you know, there's nothing you think you should have done or could have done differently, or there are things that you are planning to do.
Started 5 years earlier for Brexit. No.
Well, it's a good point.
Look, ultimately, I started my property finance business as the market tanked.
Yeah.
But what I would say is that if I can survive a new business in this tough market with a lean business, with the ability to bring cash into the business, stabilise and grow slowly and carefully and being considered, then in some ways I've got a bit of a jump start on even some of the established businesses.
Well, you've got a jump start on everyone who hasn't started yet.
Well, either hasn't started, but there's a lot of big businesses who've grown in the boom.
Yeah.
They're going to have to start making some tough decisions.
So where do you see your business in 5 years' time? What do you want your business to look like? And these aren't necessarily things that you have to answer now. They're things that I want you to think about. Because do you want to have 100 brokers? Or do you want to be a niche firm? Do you want to have big commitments? Or do you want to have a few clients that is it more corporate? Or is it...
No, I think it's a balance. I don't want to go so big to the point where it's boom or bust, right? But I also don't want it to be too small, whereby we only have so much organic growth with the people that are
but
in business.
But you have a 3-year budget, like what I how much business I expect to write.
Yeah, of course. I've got to have a cash flow and a forecast for the next 3 to 5 years. Otherwise, I'm not going to really. You've got to hit targets.
Yeah, good.
You've got to have aims. You've got to have targets. Otherwise, you're just going to sit there, go through the motions, strip out as much money as you can.
I think these are the things that people don't consider either. And you were talking about this earlier before we started recording about how many additional things there are on top of your employment. So, okay, you thought you had it down. You thought you knew how to run a business. You're running your P&L. What surprises did you get when you started Creation? Like, what additional things did
thinking
you have
about every single penny I was spending on marketing, on, you know, every time you do you print business cards for everyone. You know, I know that it's a small amount.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the beginning, when you know, when you're not bringing £1 million, £2 million of fees in, and you're just building and growing, you know, one of the things I had to contend with as well when I first started was all my restricted covenants got imposed upon me by my last business. So I had 6 months where I couldn't deal with anyone, any client I dealt with for the previous 12 months.
Yeah.
So that's tough. That's but tough. On the flip side, what it did do was it got me off my arse and made me go and find a brand new client base.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is actually a good thing because it's quite easy to rest on your laurels and just say, oh, I've got clients, I don't really need to work as hard.
Yeah.
It made me graft again. So yeah, there's just all the little things you don't think about. And you know what? Whereas before I could say, you know, if an employee's got an issue, it's down to me. I've got a big HR team who've got a big book of what to follow.
Yeah.
You've got to make a decision on every little thing, and every little thing can affect your business.
Indeed, it can.
So while it's lean, those decisions are easy. I think the bigger the business, sometimes the difficult the decision.
More money, more problems.
Exactly.
Okay. So best bit of advice you've been given. You mentioned that I must have given shitloads of good advice over the years. But anyone else?
I mean, I struggled to find one from you, but do you know what? I got there's two or three that have really stuck out. So one of my first jobs in property was at King Sturge, who are now part of Jones Lang. They bought them, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And a guy called Tim Sonics, who was my director in charge when I was a young whippersnapper, he pulled me up on day two and said, listen, I'm going to tell you two things. Always be professional and never bullshit. And it stuck with me forever.
Yeah,
honestly, stuck me forever.
Yeah.
And because of those two bits, I wouldn't say I'm always professional and I try not to bullshit. But the bullshit bit, you know, the pressure is just turn up on time, do what you say you're going to do and the rest will fall into place. And the bullshit bit was don't be afraid to ask questions and don't pretend you know it.
Yeah, which we touched on
before. And we've already touched on it. And those two things really, really stuck. It's amazing that guy probably hasn't got a clue that he even said those things to me, let alone that it stuck.
But he actually probably walks around every day saying that to everyone. Don't bullshit.
Yeah.
Don't bullshit. Yeah. Don't bullshit a bullshitter. Yeah. Right. You sent me that yesterday. Right.
So that was good. Then the advice you gave me when I started at West One was no question's a stupid question. We touched on that as well.
Yeah.
Right, because, you know.
You got an example of where that, like, paid off?
Listen, when I first
asked... I guess when you asked whatever his face is, like, you know, hire me.
I'll tell you what, I'll give you a good example. I touched it a little bit. I had a hotel development deal when I was at LSH. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. But I knew I could see it was a decent deal. So I called up the lender and said, I've never done a hotel development deal. I said, I've got all the info. Can you hold my hand through this process? Teach me along the way and I'll take your lead. And because I said that, he was only too delighted to help me because he realised actually people like to impart their knowledge in you if they think they know things.
Yeah.
So give them the opportunity and you'll learn.
Did
it do it? No, deal didn't happen. But the bottom line is I then learned how to do it and learned how to do a hotel deal afterwards, definitely, which we subsequently done one. Awesome. So, you know, that for me, it was a prime example of I don't know it all, drop my ego, drop the pride, be a bit humble and people are all too happy to help you.
Wicked. I think we're just going to chuck in on this. A lot of people, I think, are afraid to ask questions, and that's the big thing you come across, isn't it?
Yeah.
People are very egotistic. I know it all. But definitely, like you said, whatever age you are, you're forever learning.
Yeah, I mean, like, being afraid is something that I reckon will be a repeating theme, because being scared to fail, being scared to ask a question, being scared to put your hand up, you know, those things hold back everyone, in my opinion. Because when someone says, put your hand up,
one guy in the room puts their hand up, 25 people don't.
Yeah.
So you're only hearing what one person.
And then 25 people wish they had the balls to put.
Yeah, and then you know, hopefully, you know.
What if I'm laughed at? What if they?
That's it.
What if I look stupid?
Give a shit. Whatever.
People are worried about their surroundings, their friends, and like you touched on.
The one thing I always say about people going self-employed, people when they're prepared, when they're ready to give it a go, is what is the worst that can happen? Let's say you're the most cautious person ever, and you save up 12 months worth of time to live, which would be sensible. You're ready, you've got your business plan, your partner, you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
If you leave and it goes wrong and you've given it your best shot and you go back to, like most people, back to your job at Foxton's or back to your job in banking, they're not going to turn you away. Like, as an employer, certainly from my point of view, you love someone who's given it a go, learned something about themselves, learned something about the industry, tried to do something new, realised that nobody wants to buy hard-boiled sweets for £20 each and decided to come back to work. Or your circumstances change. People have a baby, people split up, they get divorced, people die, people move on. And, you know, people, you've got nothing to lose. Life is very precious.
I agree. Look, fear's a dream killer.
Yeah.
Fear is, you know, it'll kill your dreams because you'll be so crippled by it. You think, well, what if I do fail? You know what? Then what if I get ridiculed? And look, we also, all of us, live in a bubble, right? Particularly in Northwest London, particularly in property, right? It is a bubble. Everyone knows everyone's business. Everyone knows what each other are doing, and you know you've got eyes on you, and that can be quite intimidating. And you know, worried about what everyone thinks of you.
Not
what if I don't do it? You just got
fuck.
Well, we know you don't give a fuck. You never have.
I'm just here to do a good job and to do what I think is going to be interesting, successful, profitable, and bring good people together. And you know,
I don't want to look back at regrets. That's what my biggest thing. I don't want to look back in 10, 15 years and go, but if I'd done it then, but what if? What if, you know? I'd rather say, well, I gave it a go. Now, obviously, that's not where my skill set lies. Maybe I'll go and do something else. Right.
All right, I think we're done. I mean, I don't want to overdo it. We can always come back. I'm getting more and more comfortable as time goes by. Anything obvious that anyone thinks I've missed while we're actually sitting around the table?
What were the questions?
Yeah, so employed versus self-employed, the start of our business relationship, predictions for 5 to 10 years. Oh, tell me something
Jesus
interesting
Christ.
That you think is going to happen within 5 to 10 years.
It could be anything.
Yeah, it's just...
I think what has to happen in my...
Sorry.
I think what has to happen in my industry, our industry...
Or anything, but yeah.
No, I think what will happen... I still think the banking system's completely archaic. I think lending's still slightly archaic. I think the alternative lending sector has picked things up, and I think we'll just end up going more online, more digital,
more app-based.
I knew
you were going to give me a chance to talk about the platform.
Oh, sorry. that's just where I think it has to go, because the world's going that way. You look at Instagram, you look at YouTube.
What's the biggest problem that needs fixing, in your opinion?
Brexit.
In our industry?
Well, from like you're saying tech.
I think transparency. I think clear knowledge, clear... guidelines from lenders and from borrowers about one, what they want, what the lenders are willing to do and what borrowers actually want and whether the project fits. And sometimes those things get miscommunicated, which is why I still think brokers are a good quality brokers are required. But look, ultimately, you could say, well, Nick, that could put you out of a job. Well, that means I've just got to move with the times.
Fair enough. Good man. That is it. It's been fun. We've got...
thank you for having me.
My pleasure, Nicholas. Thank you for coming.
It was a pleasure talking.
Pleasure.
Thank you, everybody. I will be flying to Abu Dhabi tonight with my microphone to continue DefenderCast journey. Thank you very much. Goodbye.